This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. After all the running round, the omnipresent carols on the Muzak, and the incessant good cheer, do you ever find yourself muttering, "Bah, humbug"? If you visited Bedford Falls once too often or overdosed on a Charlie Brown Christmas, do you find yourself rooting for the Grinch? Do you giggle when the shepherds pick their noses in the school pageant? Today, as a pre-Christmas gift to all you closet Scrooges out there, Talk of the Nation serves up a heaping helping of Christmas irreverence. No deeper meaning, no fuzzy ending, and no one will learn anything. On comets, on capers, on scientists and cynics, we've got stories of dysfunctional families and psychedelic Santas, satirical songs and Christmas drag queens. We're going to spike the eggnog and throw a few cherry bombs up the chimney, and we have the rest of the evening to beg our way back onto the nice list. And, of course, we want to hear from you. What are your family's real holiday stories? Nothing that prompts an awe now. Tell us about the places your family tries to hide Aunt Wanda's fruitcake, or the weirdest thing that happened the Christmas you worked at the mall. Our number is 800-989-8255. That's 800-989-TALK. And the email address is totn@npr.org. And starting off the Christmas tell-all is Matthew Clam, author of Sam the Cat, and in possession of his own share of holiday disillusionment. And he joins us here on this wet Washington Christmas Eve in Studio 3A. And nice of you to come in today.
Thanks, Neil.
I understand you're just back from the town that all of us immediately associate with Christmas.
Yeah, I just was in Las Vegas. I'm writing a piece for GQ magazine on the U.S. National Ping Pong Championships.
And what was Christmas in Las Vegas like?
Well, I wanted to say first that I just yesterday finally did a little bit of Christmas shopping, but the only present I actually bought before yesterday was, if you go into any Walgreens in Las Vegas, you can see they now sell a shaky paperweight globe with Siegfried and Roy's white tigers in them. And I guess since that tiger ate Roy, it's become a kind of a cult figure there, and so I bought a shaky paperweight with the white tigers in it, and I guess it's, you know, one down, one to go for the white tigers.
Well, and journalistic accuracy ate part of Roy.
Right.
What about closer to home? How does Christmas come to the Clam household?
I was telling your lovely producer that every year in January, my wife calls her mom kind of tearfully and says that she would rather she doesn't send any chocolates on St. Nicholas Day and no Stollen around Christmas.
Your wife's mother, I take it, is German.
And my mother-in-law is German, and she loves the holiday. And it's a very emotional thing. There's the food, and there's the nostalgia, and 11 months go by, and on St. Nicholas Day, the box of chocolates arrive. And that's it comes into the house kind of like a ticking time bomb. And we don't eat that kind of stuff usually, so my wife usually defuses the bomb by eating all the chocolates. And then she feels really sick, and 2 weeks go by, and the Stollen arrives. And
the Stollen, for those who are unfamiliar with it, this is a confection roughly the same weight as lead.
It's the size of a football, about, and it weighs about as much as a bowling ball. And she's taken the last couple of years to carrying the Stollen once she knows that she's got it in her hands and running it over to the garbage can out front and throwing it in there, which unfortunately doesn't prevent her then from, out of just pure guilt, digging it out like an hour later. And it's wrapped, you know, in the plastic and in a box and stuff like that, and she brings it back in the house and she eats it.
This is not the Seinfeld rule. Once it's in the garbage, it's garbage.
And she brings it in the house, and she has, you know, more of the nostalgia, and it's the mother's love. I mean, it's food, and it's all that stuff mixed together, and she chows that, and then... So anyway, right now, we have the box of chocolates that arrived on St. Nicholas Day that are ticking under, with all the presents over there in the corner of the living room, and the Stollen hasn't arrived yet, although we're kind of waiting for it, because we know she usually doesn't miss. So anyway... I'm Jewish, and, like, you know, Jews know all about force feeding, and but the Germans, you know, we got nothing on them. They've really mastered this part.
Let's get a caller involved in the conversation. Leslie joins us from Savannah, Georgia.
Hi.
Hi.
I was the jerk of the century to my brother when he was 4 and I was 12 and he wasn't minding me or doing what I thought he should do. So I got on the phone and I called Santa Claus, my neighbor across the street, my little friend Donna. And I said, "Hi, Santa, this is Leslie." And she's on the other end, of course, saying, "What are you doing?" And I said, "Yeah, Leslie Jeffrey's sister, you know, here on Merritt Island, Florida. Yeah, I need you to just not bring him his presents this year." My little brother stood there with the biggest tears just soaking his face. And I looked right at him and kept on going and said, "Yeah, you know, what would be really good is take the presents next door to Kent, who was the neighborhood terror that none of the kids liked. He was the biggest brat, selfish, mean, horrible. I'm telling Santa Claus, yeah, just take Jeff's presents to Kent, and we'll see what happens next year. I'll give you a report."
Has your brother ever spoken to you since?
He has spoken to me, but I got a reprieve for a while because I think he literally blocked it out for years. And he's now 40. And maybe 10 years ago, said something one time about, you know, it's just, I'm amazed that you even speak to me after what I did to you when you were 4. And at first, Jeff was like, "I don't know what you're talking about." Later, he said, "Oh, I remember," and it all came back. And he said, "I can't believe I'm speaking to you either." And needless to say, I've been trying to make up for it ever since.
How many years have you been on the naughty list consecutively now?
Well, I'll be 50 this summer, so it's been a while.
Well, Leslie, now that you've confessed all on national radio, maybe yeah. Santa will see his way clear to delivering something to your house this year.
Oh, I hope so. I just want him to deliver himself in person, and I'll be happy.
All right.
Thanks very much.
Thanks very much for the story.
Okay, bye-bye.
Matthew Clamp, what were the holidays like in your house when you were a kid?
That's really an awful story.
It is an awful story. I can't wait to try it out, though.
I was just thinking that at my 20th year high school reunion, one of my good friends, Danny Patterson, pulled my wife aside and said, "Did you know that when I was in second grade, your husband took me aside and told me that there was no Santa Claus?" That he said, "Danny, don't you realize it's just your parents?" And he still was angry about it all these years later. But I was thinking this morning that in my family around Christmas, it was always kind of a battle. My mom went overboard and bought us too many presents, so my dad would sort of sit there really fuming, and every time somebody opened a present, he would just kind of shake his head a little bit, and his favorite thing was to take all the wrapping in the room and burn it, and, you know, maybe catch some of the presents in there too and burn them, but it was that kind of thing.
Now, you live in Washington, D.C. now. Unlike Las Vegas, occasionally gets cold here. It could actually be a foggy Christmas Eve but before it's all over.
Yep.
But it can the treacle meter can hit the pin pretty often here in Washington, D.C.
Yeah, treacle meter.
It's a little bit sweet.
It's always kind of a tough place to be a less than upbeat person living in Washington, because there are a lot of people here who I think were sort of like class president and they came here to do good. And I think it's one of the tough things about Christmas for everybody is that, you know, if you spend 364 days a year kind of like not running around with a smile on your face, and all of a sudden you're supposed to be so incredibly happy, you know, for 2 or 3 days in a row. It's kind of rough, and so anyway, yeah, I try not to get too much into the Christmas spirit that way, I guess.
Now, you write a lot about dysfunctional people in dysfunctional relationships. The holidays must be perfect material for this, right?
I guess so. Yeah, I am sort of keeping my eyes wide open when I go to like these parties where the theme is love and family and everybody's so nice to each other. Washington is a very strange, two-faced place where people spend all day kind of making sure their reputations are perfect, and they spend all night making sure that their power is intact. And it makes for, you know, great perversity and conflict in the people I hang out with.
I lived in and grew up in and around the city of New York, where I always felt that the people's true emotions were never very far from the surface.
Right.
And they would tell you exactly what they thought. Often you didn't want to hear it, but nevertheless.
Very refreshing.
It was a true emotion. And here, after I moved to Washington, I noticed that people were unfailingly polite, and I assumed that they were the same surly mean people underneath the surface as the New Yorkers were. They were just not telling me about
it. I think it's not good for them either. I think they become more and more full of it as they get older when they stay in this town for too long.
I'm not going to pursue that question.
Okay. Now. But I was sort of thinking about having just come back from Las Vegas. Do you mind if I go on a little about Vegas?
Just a little bit.
It's just the kind of place where there is no faking what they are, and it's kind of refreshing. You walk through a casino in the morning, and you see, you know, the prostitutes leaving the rooms they were in the night before, and some of them are wearing a Santa hat, and that is kind of seasonal and light. But other than that, it's exactly what it always was. It's the gambling paradise, you know, and they have illuminated billboards being driven around on trucks, you know.
Now, they did go for that family entertainment center for a while there.
Yeah, I guess they still have that. They still have, you know, the Star Trek kind of pavilion and stuff like that. That's very sweet and lovely.
Exploding volcanoes.
Right, yeah, and the pirate ship that sinks every day. Yeah,
mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, that's important to have, I guess. Right. Yeah. And I understand the buses have a real Christmas theme this year in Vegas.
Yeah, yeah. I was just saying they drive these buses that are decorated with a giant shrink wrap, you know, advertisement, and they actually have escorts, you know, who are sent to your hotel room, and the escorts are on the buses, and so you're walking on the street and you see these 15-foot tall, you know, billboards of naked women with Santa hats on going by you as you walk down the street. Very seasonal, Jerry.
Matthew Clamp, thanks very much.
Thanks, Neil.
Matthew Clamp joined us here in Studio 3A this afternoon. His book of short stories is Sam the Cat, and a bah humbug to you. According to Zogby's polling service, a quarter of Americans believe Santa Claus drives an SUV in the off-season. Our next guest may not have the answer to that question, but he's had to research some other strange corners of this season. Roger Highfield is science editor at the Daily Telegraph in London. He turned years of holiday articles into a book called The Physics of Christmas, and he joins us now from his home in London. And Merry Christmas Eve.
Merry Christmas to you, too.
So what story did you have to come up with this year?
Well, I've got a sort of daft dispute over the nationality of Father Christmas. We've had lots of claims on him in the past. You know, the Finns claim that he's Finnish for their tourist industry. You've got Turkey saying that he must be Turkish because St. Nicholas was venerated on an island called Gamilla. Of course, there's all the old jokes about, well, he lives in the North Pole, so therefore he's North Polish. But it turns out there's actually a dispute over who owns the North Pole. A few years ago, the Russians tried to claim it, and now the Danes are putting in an application, and it's all based on something called the Lomonosov Ridge, which runs underneath the ice cap. And it's now down to geologists to convince the UN which of the countries, Greenland or Russia, the ridge is attached to, and whoever can convince the UN of this might actually be able to claim the nationality of Father Christmas as a result.
Whatever happened to the idea of international waters, or international ice in this case?
Well, that's still running, but what they're trying to do is to exploit a UN convention that allows coastal nations to claim rights to the resources of the seabed close to their shores. And in a magazine called European Geologist, there's a long article about how the Danes, on behalf of Greenland, which is actually a sort of Danish territory, are now going to put in this application for the Lomonosov Ridge and claim Father Christmas or Santa Claus to be their own. So it's all pretty shocking stuff, really. I think I prefer the old joke about him being North Polish, really.
I think that's better, and we certainly can't allow the Russians to start to get a toy manufacturing gap over everybody else. I mean, that would
be... Absolutely.
Yes. Roger Highfield, stay with us. We're going to take a short break and take more calls when we come back on the other side. Our number is 800-989-8255. That's 800-989-TALK, and the email address is TOTN@npr.org. We're taking a less than reverent look at the holidays. We want your stories of familial faux pas and nativity disasters after the break. Also, Weird Al Yankovic joins us to spread the joy of the season through song.
Oh, jingle bells, Batman smells, Robin lays an egg. The Batmobile broke its wheel, the Joker got a...
The immortal Bart Simpson on the program. I'm Neil Conan. It's Talk of the Nation from NPR News. This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. This hour, we're poking holes in a few angels' wings and tipping some sacred reindeer with a humorous look at the holidays to get us all through the Christmas Eve jitters and the mid-Hanukkah headaches. If you'd like to join us, 800-989-8255. Email TOTN at NPR.org. Our guest is Roger Highfield, science editor at the Daily Telegraph in London and author of The Physics of Christmas. And let's get another caller on the line. This is Mary Ann, who's with us from St. Louis, Missouri.
Hi.
Hi.
Merry Christmas, first of all.
Thank you.
And I have a question for you, your viewers, or any of your experts. When we were young, my father used to tell us a story of a guy called the Belchnickler, who would come on Christmas Day or after Christmas Day and take the presents that Santa left you if you were bad. Now, he claims the Belchnickler visited him several times when he was a kid and took away roller skates and a bicycle. So that kind of struck fear in my heart and my sister's heart. So we were always really good on Christmas Day, and the Belchnickler never came, but we were wondering if anyone else out there has ever heard of him.
Roger Highfield, have you heard of the Belchnickler, or do you consider this just breaking and entering?
No. No, this is actually this is a tradition, particularly in Germany. Often, the sort of Father Christmas figure, definitely in days gone by, was joined by a dwarfish, dark-faced companion, often a very frightening figure. And whereas we like to sort of psychologically torture our children today by saying to them, "Look, if you're naughty, you won't get any presents." In fact, it was much more direct there. And this character had all sorts of names like Gumfinkel, Necht Ruprecht, Peltznickel, all sorts of things. And commonly, he carried a bundle of switches, which he'd offer the parents to beat the living daylights out of naughty children. So a bit politically incorrect by today's standards. So your call is absolutely spot on. This character is very real indeed. Well, certainly if you're in Germany anyway.
Okay, well, that settles that. Now we're going to really have to pay attention to Dad some more. Okay, well, thank you very much, and have a great Christmas.
You too, Mary Ann.
Right. Bye-bye.
And I understand that in The Physics of Christmas, in your book, you had an idea about how Santa might be able to tell who's on the naughty list and who's on the nice list.
Oh, there's all sorts of sort of crazy suggestions, and one of them is that he uses something called a squid. This is the most sensitive detector known to mankind. It's actually a superconducting quantum interference device. They're used in brain scanners to monitor tiny flickers of magnetic activity in a living brain. And so the suggestion is that Santa's got a global squid network tuning into the thoughts of little children, trying to work out what they're thinking about, what they desire, you know, that Barbie, Rapunzel or whatever. And voila, that's how he manages to get it right every Christmas.
Let's go to Jim, and he's with us from DeSoto, Kansas.
Well, hello.
Hi.
How are you today?
Very well, thanks.
Oh, I just wanted to tell you a story that happened to me about 25 years ago. It was on a Saturday morning before Christmas, and I was due in to visit the children at the mall, like I always do. And that morning, though, I woke up with the flu, and I tried calling my employer and told him that I probably wasn't going to be able to make it in that day. I didn't feel well. And they said, "Well, you know, Santa, it's going to be pretty tough to get someone to fill in for you today." So I took some Alka-Seltzer and some aspirin and got myself all ready and got to the mall and was feeling pretty good when I was strolling to my chair. And they were selling these sausages. They were cooking them up and selling these sausages out of a little store there. And
oh, I think I know where this story's going, Jim.
Anyway, they insisted that I have some sausage. The smell wasn't quite enough to set me off, but as I went by, one of their little elves came out and jammed a piece of sausage in my mouth, and as you can imagine, along with the sausage, I had quite a mess of hair in there also, And I made it through the day, but it was a very unpleasant experience.
I can understand your difficulty, Jim, and I have to applaud you for your restraint. Have you ever gone back to do that again?
Oh, I've been doing it now for about 27 years, and it's for the most part a very good time, but the sausage story I thought would be in keeping with your theme today.
Well, thanks very much, and we'll stay off the bratwurst today.
Okay.
Thanks very much, Jim.
Merry Christmas.
Before we let you go, Roger Highfield, in the news you can use section, is there any science that we should consider if there's a Christmas party today?
Oh, golly. Well, there's the science of the hangover, of course. I mean, obviously, the simple way to avoid a hangover is just not to drink, but that's all to do with, drinking lots and lots of water, choosing alcohols that aren't dark, so avoid the rum and the red wine and don't mix it. So there's things like that. Thermodynamicists have been looking at how to cook the turkey, assuming that it's homogeneous and perfectly spherical. And in fact, all those recipes and all those rules of thumb that cooks tend to use across the world tend to be pretty much the same as the mathematically worked out thermodynamic equivalent. There's even a team at Kinetic, which is a big company in the UK, which has come up with an equation for how to pull a Christmas cracker. I'm not sure if you have crackers in the States, actually.
Sometimes we do.
And it comes up with a not unsurprising conclusion that you should grip it in both hands and jerk it downwards, which I suspect a three-year-old probably could have told this high-powered team of scientists. This is a few things that we can help people with.
Well, Roger Highfield, thank you very much.
My pleasure.
And Merry Christmas to you.
Merry Christmas to you, too.
Roger Highfield is the author of The Physics of Christmas, science editor for The Daily Telegraph, which is published in London, and he joined us from his home in the British capital. Now, where would Christmas humor be without Christmas carols to make fun of? With easy tunes and lyrics everybody already knows and usually can't get out of their heads anyway, they are ripe for parody, and who better to take us through the landscape of the twisted Christmas carol than the man who managed to write a carol about nuclear annihilation.
The button has been pressed. The radio just let us know that this is not a test. Everywhere the atom bombs are dropping, it's the end of all humanity. No more time for last minute shopping. It's time to face your final destiny.
Weird Al Yankovic, the grandmaster of the musical parody, joins us now. His latest album is Poodle Hat, and he's with us from his home in Southern California. And welcome to Talk of the Nation.
Thanks, Neil. How you doing?
Now, you've written a couple of Christmas satires besides that one. What goes into a good Christmas joke?
Well, you know, I think the best Christmas novelty songs are the ones that don't deal specifically with the true meaning of Christmas, meaning it's not a good idea generally to mock somebody's religion. I've done a few songs like Amish Paradise and Pretty Fly for a Rabbi, but those are more poking fun at a lifestyle rather than mocking somebody's belief system. So I think if you're going to do a Christmas novelty song, it's best to deal with the secular aspects of the holiday.
I see. For example?
Well, the commercialism that goes on during the holidays is rampant, of course, and there's been a number of classic songs along those lines. A Christmas Carol by Tom Lehrer is one of my all-time favorites. A Green Christmas by Stan Freberg. Things like that deal with more of the greed and the obnoxious behavior that goes on.
Well, we happen to have a clip of the Tom Lehrer song. Let's listen to a little bit of it.
Shall we?
Christmas time is here, by golly, disapproval would be folly. Deck the halls with hunks of holly, fill a cup and don't say when. Kill the turkeys, ducks, and chickens, mix the punch, drag out the dickens. Even though the prospect sickens, brother, here we go again. On Christmas Day, you can't get sore. Your fellow man you must adore. There's time to rob him all the more. The other 306 at E4. Relations, sparing no expense'll send some useless old utensil or a matching pen and pencil. Just the thing I need. How nice. It doesn't matter how sincere it is, nor how heartfelt the spirit. Sentiment will not endear it. What's important is the price.
What's important is the price. Tom Lehrer.
True words.
And, you know, what is it, though, that makes a great parody stick on the minds of people forever and ever afterwards?
Well, it's hard to say. It's pretty subjective, really. I think that Christmas parodies and Christmas novelty songs in the last generation have certainly become a lot more dark. I mean, in the 40s, a Christmas novelty song would be something along the lines of Spike Jones, "All I Want for Christmas is My Two Front Teeth."
Mm-hmm.
Now, I think you have to be a bit edgier. And as a result, you know, Grandma Got Run Over by a Reindeer is probably the most well-known Christmas novelty song of the last few decades. And, you know, that's actually a fairly dark song when you look at the lyrics.
And indeed, that song has morphed. And here's a more recent version of Grandma Got Run Over by a Reindeer.
Osama got run over by a reindeer right outside his cave on Christmas Eve. Some folks say there's no such thing as Santa, but now even the Taliban believe.
That's interjecting a little topical humor into what became an instant classic.
Yes, that's another hallmark of novelty music, is a lot of it is very topical.
And another hallmark is the tunes seem to be pretty easy.
Yeah, you know, obviously not all novelty songs have to be parodies, but if they're based on a structure or form that people are already intimately familiar with, that definitely helps in the joke.
Is there something that you really wanted to do but then said, you know, maybe people would just be a little too angry?
You know, I have a song called The Night Santa Went Crazy on one of my albums, and it's basically a song about Santa Claus just flipping out and killing all of his elves and reindeer. You know, a cheery holiday song.
Going postal, as it were.
Yeah, and in my original version of the song, I had Santa getting shot in the head by the FBI, and my friends were saying, Al, you can't do that. Nobody's going to want to listen to that. So I toned it down for the album, and afterwards I thought, you know, Santa needs to die. I'm sorry. So I put out the extra gory version on the B-side of the single.
On the B-side of the single, so it didn't get played too often.
No, but the fans found it, and that actually became the more the preferred version of the song, I think.
And the other one you mentioned earlier about making fun, poking gentle fun, I'm sure, at our friends in the Amish community, but in terms of radio play, how could they tell?
So true. You know, there's not a lot of big Amish MTV watchers or radio listeners, really.
I suspect that may be the last group you can get away with making fun of.
I love to mock the helpless and defenseless.
Weird Al Yankovic, keep at it.
I certainly will. Thank you so much.
Weird Al Yankovic has released innumerable satirical albums. His latest is Poodle Hat, and he joined us from his home in Southern California. And let's get some more listeners on the line. This is Lynch, who's with us from Nashville, Tennessee.
Hey, Neil, how are you?
Very well, thanks.
Merry Christmas to you and your staff.
Thank you.
Several years ago, I had a rather, evil sales manager in an automobile dealership where I work. And the salespeople got together one Christmas and decided that we'd give him a special present. So we took out an ad with his phone number to run the morning of Christmas Day that said, "We buy used Christmas trees $5 and up."
Ooh.
Oh, yeah. I understand his phone started ringing around 5 a.m., and by noon he'd had it cut off and his number changed and raised several different varieties of stink with a local newspaper. But the real kicker came 30 days later because we had billed the ad to him as well.
I assume that the quality of this joke has lasted down the years, though perhaps not with him.
Oh, well, you know, actually he and his daughter and I became acquainted several years later when we worked together, and I admitted my sin to her, and we've actually had a pretty good laugh on it because she remembered it as being one of the bloodiest Christmases ever at her house.
I can certainly agree with that.
Right.
Lynch, glad to see that you're permanently on the naughty list, and thanks very much for calling the show.
My pleasure. I hope you have a great holiday. Thank you, Neil.
Thank you. You're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. And one Christmas song you will not be hearing on the radio this winter comes from the Dragapella group, the Kinsey Six.
Office parties in decorous.
Fa la 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 la.
Drink too much, offend and bore us.
Fa la 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 la.
Puke and pass out at your leisure.
Fa la 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 la.
And at that point, the song becomes a little too spicy for midday radio. The Kinsey Six are a group of a cappella singing, four-part harmonizing, bigwig-wearing drag queens from the city of San Francisco. Their first holiday show ever, Oy Vey in the Manger, is running right now in the city by the bay. And joining us now from his home there is founding member Ben Schatz. And welcome to Talk of the Nation.
Hi, how are you?
Very well. Now, your website describes this show as a bit of sacred cow tipping. What's the scenario?
Well, essentially, we live in the manger. We live in the same manger that Jesus was born in. We've been living there for 2,000 years, yep. And we're having our annual holiday party. And so the show involves preparing for the party, and then what turns out happens, now don't let this dissuade you from buying tickets, but it turns out that nobody comes to the party, as usual. and but then it turns out we welcome the audience as our carolers who rung the doorbell, and we inflict ourselves upon them.
So why a holiday show? I mean, is this a season that really needs more camping up?
You know, it's just, this season it's just got a big old target on it. There's so much to make fun of, and since we do parodies and social satire, it just seemed that this was the perfect target for us, and we've been having a wonderful time.
Now, there's a scene early on in the show with a retelling of the Christmas story, the way your characters tell it. They were the first occupants, as you mentioned, of the Bethlehem manger.
But lo, Mary poundeth on the door and demandeth to be let in, saying, "For unto me a child shall be born."
See, since she was pregnant, they wouldn't let her fly on Virgin Airlines.
Oh.
So her trip got canceled, but she claims there was no room at the inn.
Right, and we were just about to have our big annual Let's Make a Big Deal on December 25th for No Particular Reason party. So we were like, excuse me, we already have enough pregnant virgins here. Thank you very much.
Right.
So then Mary says, "Bubula!" I'm like, where did Mary pick up Yiddish in ancient Palestine? But whatever. "Bubula," she says, "I'm going to give birth to the Son of God." And I'm like, yeah, you and every other Jewish mother.
Now, I guess some people like apostles, some people like apostasy.
Yes, yes, yes. We're heavier on the latter.
Have anybody in the audience gotten upset at your somewhat heretical take on a sacred subject?
Well, and you excerpted some of the more heretical stuff. So, you know, what's been surprising, I mean, we thought we would offend more people than we have. There was someone from a Christian group who said that they were going to boycott the theater, but unfortunately they didn't organize tickets, so it didn't do us any good.
Now, was there any point at which you four, when you're writing the show, came up with a joke and they said, well, we just can't go that far?
Innumerable times. Innumerable times. There are many, many things that I couldn't even tell you, and because, you know, we talked about it, we thought it was really, really funny and just too mean. So
now,
we didn't go there.
You are not the first Jewish humorist we've had on today.
I know, I've been listening.
Is Christmas particularly ripe target from the outside?
Well, you know, I mean, two of the four of us and two of the three writers are both gay and Jewish, like most of your listeners, of course. And so, you know, we have a sort of a rich outsider's view of the holidays. And I think it really, you know, it's really refreshing for people who are actually insiders to come and to hear, you know, the way it all looks from the outside.
We're going to come back after a short break, and Ben Schatz will tell us the story of the time he worked as a mall Santa. Ben Schatz plays Rachel in the a cappella drag group The Kinsey Six. Their holiday show, Oy Vey in the Manger, is currently running in San Francisco, and we'll continue talking with him. If you'd like to join our conversation, it's 800-989-8255, 800-989-TALK, and the email address is totn@npr.org. We'll also be discussing the little silver balls that are missing from Christmas cookies in California, and all the latest war on terror toys coming to a stocking near you. I'm Neil Conan. It's Talk of the Nation from NPR News. This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. Tomorrow, strip the popcorn off the tree and get in line at the multiplex. It's a holiday movies review. Guest host Jennifer Ludden will be here. Today, we're getting our holiday cheer out of the spiked eggnog bowl with a twisted look at the season. If you'd like to join the conversation with some strange Christmas stories, our number is 800-989-8255, or you can email us, totn@npr.org. Here's an email from Sally Tarasoff in San Antonio. Christmas does not start in our home until we play Grandma Got Run Over by a Reindeer. Why? Well, the year the song came out, a drunk driver drove onto our front porch at Christmas Eve, the only Christmas Eve my mother-in-law had ever been present. Portent of things to come? Oh, yes. That from Sally. Our guest is Ben Schatz, a founding member of the drag cappella group The Kinsey Six, whose holiday show Oy Vey in the Manger is running right now in San Francisco. And that teaser, you worked as a department store Santa?
I did. It was in between a lawyer job and an executive director job back when I was pretending to be respectable. And I worked as a Santa. There were 9 Santas at this store. And 4 of us actually turned out to be Jewish, interestingly. So not only do we control Hollywood, international communism, and international banking, but we are, in fact, also running the Santa trade.
I assume you've gone to see the movie Bad Santa.
I have not.
Well, it's all about that particular trait, and I don't believe he was Jewish, but I think he had some other redeeming qualities.
It's a really interesting and, quite frankly, a miserable experience. The kids are wonderful. The parents, well, some of the parents are wonderful, but they're not the memorable ones. A lot of the parents are, you know, they're frustrated. They've been waiting in line forever. And particularly the kids who are like 2 or 3, don't take your 2 to 3-year-old child to be photographed on Santa's lap. Santa is very, very scary to them. And when the parents have been waiting in line for an hour and then the kid is crying, it's really not pretty. It's not pretty at all.
Did you ever say something mean to a kid when you were Santa Claus?
No, I absolutely not. I just waited till I took off the outfit. Then I was abusive.
Ben Schatz, thanks very much.
Thank you.
Ben Schatz plays Rachel in the a cappella drag group, the Kinsey Six. Oy Vey in the Manger, running in San Francisco. He spoke with us from his home there. Let's get some more callers in. Melissa's on the line with us from Minneapolis.
Hello.
Hi.
Let's see. I'm oldest of 7 of kind of a... irreverent group, which all sort of share a sick sense of humor. I miss them terribly. We do have some traditions, and I'm realizing I'm now like 35 years old. Most of all, that seemed to just things that aggravated my mother, we could all bond through that. My mom used to make just tons of Christmas cookies, and our job was to decorate them, and some very specific traditions arose out of that, like, I don't know, gingerbread men in pink plotted bikinis and abominable snowmen and political figures du jour. But we used to delight in removing the baby Jesus from the manger and putting abominable snowman or a gingerbread man in a bathing suit in there, and she'd go ballistic.
Recoil in horror, I think, is the...
Pardon me?
Recoiling in horror.
Yeah, and so that, of course, just made us even happier. So she'd remove it, and then we'd replace it again, or there was like a Santa Claus figure on the mantle that we'd have him dancing with one of the gingerbread men in a bikini. Oh, well, whatever. So, and there was another tradition of... Well, I'm an artist, and I used to like to edit illustrated children's books. We had one about Helen Keller, and we had one about the...
I swear we did not sabotage Melissa's cell phone. Try it again, Melissa. Ah, well, whatever it is, the phone has gone recoiling in horror. So whatever it is, clearly the phone company doesn't want you to tell it to us. I'm afraid we're going to have to abandon you.
Oh, I'm so sorry. Okay, well...
All right.
Christmas. Hope somebody I know was listening.
I hope so, too, and we'll find out what that story is someday. One more. This is Kitty. Kitty's with us from Belchertown, Massachusetts.
Hi, Neil.
Hi.
Happy Christmas.
Happy Christmas to you.
I'm sitting here trying to get psyched up to make another batch of Christmas cookies because, and I should state accurately here that it's my boyfriend's dog, not my dog, technically, who ate all of the other batches of Christmas cookies that I made yesterday. So that was supposed to take us through, and I should know better because he has a bit of a habit of this. Last year he ate a fruitcake that my friend sent from Oregon after slaving over it and using all these beautiful dried organic fruits and all of this stuff, and he ate it. It was gone.
You know, a dog that will eat your friend's fruitcake, that dog's valuable.
He could be a very valuable dog, that's true. But he ate like all of my favorite cookies, so I have another half pound of butter that I'm staring at, and I'm thinking, do I really need to do this? I don't know. I mean, I'm sure he'd love another batch, but I don't know if we need them.
Let me ask you a question.
Okay.
Do you decorate these cookies?
Well, I do. I made these little mousse cookies that have powdered sugar on them. But I know where you're going with this. You're thinking about those outlawed silver balls, probably.
I am thinking about those completely. And you know what? You should stay tuned.
Okay, I will.
All right.
Thanks.
Have a happy Christmas and good baking to you.
Thank you. Bye-bye.